1 Samuel chapter 27. It's 12 verses in this chapter, and it's not a whole lot to read here. Let's go ahead and read. And David said in his heart, I shall now perish one day by the hand of Saul. There is nothing better for me than that I should speedily escape into the land of the Philistines. And Saul shall despair of me to seek me any more in any coast of Israel. So shall I escape out of his hand. And David arose, and he passed over with 600 men that were with him unto Achish, the son of Maach, king of Gath. And David dwelt with Achish at Gath, he and his men, every man with his household, even David with his two wives, Ahinoam the Jezreelite, and Abigail the Carmelitess, and Nabal's wife. And it was told Saul that David was fled to Gath, and he sought no more again for him. David said unto Achish, if I have now found grace in thine eyes, let them give me a place in some town in the country, that I may dwell there. For why should thy servant dwell in the royal city with thee? Then Achish gave him Ziklag that day, wherefore Ziklag pertaineth unto the king of Judah unto this day. And the time that David dwelt in the country of the Philistines was a full year and 4 months. And David and his men went up and invaded the Geshurites and the Gezerites and the Amalekites, for those nations were of old the inhabitants of the land, and thou goest to Shur, even unto the land of Egypt. And David smote the land and left neither man nor woman alive, and took away the sheep and the oxen and the asses and the camel and the apparel, and returned and came to Achish. And Achish said, whither have you made a road today? And David said, against the south of Judah, against the south of the Jeremelites, and against the south of the Kenites. And David saved neither man nor woman alive to bring tidings to Gath, saying, lest they should tell on us, saying, so did David, and so will be with his manner the while he dwelleth in the country of the Philistines. And Achish believed David, saying, he hath made his people Israel utterly to abhor him, therefore he shall be my servant forever. All right, let's go ahead and pray. Father in heaven, Lord, I certainly do love you. Lord, I ask for your blessing upon the service this evening. Lord, please fill me with your spirit. Please control, Lord, what I say and how I say it. I pray for your blessing and your help, dear Lord. I pray that you'd be glorified and honored in all that is said and done, Father. I certainly love you. I pray to ask all this in Christ's name. Amen. All right, when we looked at last week, David had really another great victory, another great deliverance that God had given him. He once again came across King Saul. It was actually a time that David sort of went after him. David found out where he was and went there. The reason why David did that when we looked at this last Sunday night or the Sunday night before that was because David was planning to save his life. David was trying to show him, I mean you no harm. And the Lord blessed in everything that he did. The Lord caused the sleep to come upon King Saul and the army. And it was just amazing all that took place. And once again, King Saul affirmed how God was going to use David, how he was better than he was. And Saul had returned and said he was no longer going to seek him. And that's the setting of this. Remember, this all started back. We go back 10 chapters in chapter 17, where David defeats Goliath. You remember, then everybody was singing his praises. Saul brought him into his house, but before he knows it, Saul gets jealous. He takes over as everybody's singing about David and praising David. And the jealousy turns into rage. He tries to kill David. David ends up running. He flees from Saul's presence. When he finally left permanently, he headed to Nob. He lied to the priest. A great slaughter comes into the priest and from David's lie. And David's been on the run ever since that time. And time again, God delivered him. Even when it appeared at times there was absolutely no possible way of escape, when he's literally on a cliffside with the army coming on both sides of him and no way out, God provided a way out. He's seen God work time and time and time again. And of course, our last bit of time here, now over a year, he's been doing great. His faith has been increased. He's really been growing in it. But now he has another major time of discouragement and setback in his life. And it comes right after this victory that had taken place. David was tired of running, and he allowed discouragement to come in. I have no doubt he's been tired of running the entire time. I mean, that's no fun to be on the run without any certain dwelling place, just going from wilderness to wilderness, from cave to cave. He's responsible now for these 600 men. He has two wives that are with him, and he's getting frustrated with all of it. And after this last victory, and by the timing of it there, and David said in his heart, I shall now perish one day, between the end of verse 25 to that start, we don't see any major time taking place. So this is very soon after that last victory that he had with King Saul. Very soon after that. Many times, it's right after victories that discouragement comes in. It's many times right after a mountaintop, you find yourself in a valley rapidly. Sometimes it takes a whole lot longer to climb a mountain than it does to come down, doesn't it? Well, David's coming down off that mountain. He came down awfully fast. I think the guy jumped off the mountaintop that he was just on in chapter 26, and he finds himself in this valley, and he's very discouraged. And again, many times, discouragement comes after victories. It almost seems like a paradox there, but that's really what does happen. David gets very discouraged here in this chapter. And that discouragement leads to some really bad decisions in his life, as discouragement often does. David said, there is nothing better for me. There's nothing better for me than I should go and dwell in the land of the Philistines. I mean, where his mind is at in this place is so off base. He is so wrong in the statements that he's making. It's incredible. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. As we'll see, he was definitely wrong. David now makes bad decisions. He's making decisions while he's in this poor frame of mind. While discouragement is controlling him, he decides to make some major decisions. Now understand this. Your life is about choices. Your life is made up of a series of choices that got you at right now sitting here in this church. Those choices we make are certainly important. We all want the ability to make the best choices for our lives and our family. Making the right choices is more important than having a long life. Making right choices is key for our life. You can absolutely waste your life simply by wrong choices that you make. So now, let's get into this. Let's take a look at what David's doing here and see if we can find some help here when David is in this time of discouragement. And really what we see is the danger of discouragement of what it can do to you. And where David, how did he go off here? What took place here so quickly that he got off like that? So we want to see this as we go through what's taking place here. Again, we see David making these bad choices. He has decided to head and live with the Philistines again. Remember, this is the second time. He did this earlier. It would have been after he had left Nob. He heads over to Gath, same exact area. And that's where, when he felt threatened, that's when he decided to act like a madman. You know, he was frothing and everything else like that. He's now back in the same area. That's where he's at again, the same king. This is what's taking place. And so we're going to look at the dangers here of discouragement. And we certainly need to remember, excuse me, as most of us can attest to, we can be in the exact same place David is. That's not that difficult. I think of Psalm 103 and verse 14 reminds us, we are nothing but dust. That's what we are. And so, it's important, though, that we be on guard for that. David struggled with this. I don't think just here. I think we'll see it even when he's king. It was something that he faced. And so anyhow, we need to look at the dangers of it. Again, he'd been tired. He's been running for all these years now from King Saul. He simply wanted this to end. He wanted that to quit. So he makes the decision during a time of discouragement that he's going to go a place that he knew Saul will not chase him. If you think about over King Saul's legacy here as king, he's been a fairly weak king, especially when it comes to the Philistines. He always seems hesitant to engage the Philistine, and David knew that. It was usually Jonathan was the one who was engaging the Philistines, or it was David was the one who was engaging the Philistines. Even at times when they would invade Israel, he was hesitant to do anything about it. So David knew he was going to be safe if he went and dwelt in the land of the Philistines. He knew even though Saul was seeking after him with everything he had, David in no way believed that Saul was willing to go into the land of the Philistines to find him. And of course, that was a correct assumption. But again, let's notice some things about what takes place. First off, let's go right back there to verse 1. I think the key is the very first line of the very first verse. Here's David's problem. David said in his heart, You say, well, what's wrong with that? There's a whole lot wrong with that. One, we already know that he's concerned. He's tired of the fight right now with King Saul. He wants this to end. And he begins simply talking with himself and not with God. He begins talking with himself. Again, what the Bible's giving us a picture here. It isn't conversations he's having with any of the 600 men who are with him. These are conversations within his own heart. The Bible's showing us where his mind was. And instead of having a conversation with God, we see that he is talking within himself. Again, and understand this, what we say in our heart has tremendous power in shaping our lives and our decision-making process. What you commune with in your heart shapes your actions. It even controls your entire destiny, for that matter. David, again, was not telling anyone this. This is what he was thinking. Again, if you start saying in your heart over and over that God doesn't care about you, that's going to affect your decision-making process. You're going to start believing that. If you begin saying that, you know, trying to remove God from your thoughts, of your heart, it's going to affect your decision-making process. However, if you start saying in your heart and communing with God that of God's desire for good for your life and his protection and remembering all that he's done for you, that too is going to affect your decision-making process. What David is doing here, what leads to these wrong decisions, is simply the bad choices he's making. He's making the bad choices because of where his mind is at. He's in a time of discouragement. And now he's making critical choices during that time. And it's really what he ends up doing here is just incredible. You're seeing basically murdering and lying and everything else taking place here in this chapter. And so he was no longer communing with God. He should have been praying to God and asking for God's help and God's encouragement, but that's not what he was doing. And when we as Christians begin to go about things in our life apart from God, apart from prayer, you're always going to be in danger. It usually will always end in failure spiritually for your life. And so a question comes into place then when we're looking at this. David absolutely should have been praying. The Bible's letting us know he's not praying to God. He's just communing in his own heart. Basically what David did here, because discouragement come in, he's basically off to himself. He's probably off by the cave, doesn't want anybody around him. And he's going into a pity party this time of discouragement. But, you know, he's just thinking in his heart, I'm never getting away from Saul. This is going on for years now. I'm just done with it. Instead of praying and say, God, just give me strength for today. I mean, really, he doesn't know it, but he's about to be king. It really is about to end. He's about to fulfill God's will for his life, but he's ready to quit. And yet the victory is right there. Right there. Even if it isn't, though, that's no excuse. It's always right to do right. It's never right to do wrong. But he got into that pity party mode, and as he's dwelling on that, communing within his own heart, not talking to God, he's going to now decide to start making some decisions. And these decisions are wrong. So again, in our own life, I think it's so important that we're always maintaining the prayer life before God. When we discover what place prayer has in our life, we actually discover what place God has in our life. You know where you're at spiritually based upon your prayer life. If your prayer life is superficial, your Christianity is superficial. It might not surface like that now, but just let a dead serious event come up and you will crumble. You'll crumble. Prayerlessness shows what David was battling here with discouragement. Usually they go hand in hand. Well, you can't have one without the other. And that is unbelief. All right? You just won't find somebody who's full of faith that battles discouragement. I mean, don't get me wrong. You can have people who go through times of unbelief and discouragement comes in. That's true of all of us. Okay? But when you find somebody who's full of faith, you're not going to find somebody who's discouraged. Because When your faith is in the Creator, who is all-powerful and all-knowing, it can be difficult to get discouraged. Think about it. All right? But because we walk by faith and not by sight, every single one of us is prone to unbelief. And when unbelief sets in, you've now opened the door wide. You put the welcome mat out for discouragement to come into your life. And it will take over. And that's what happened here with David. Prayerlessness also shows unbelief. And when prayerlessness comes into your life, you open yourself up to discouragement. And listen, understand this. You can do many spiritual things without being spiritual. You can attend church. There's all kinds of things you can do without actually being spiritual. You can do a lot of spiritual activity. That's very true. Now, because of where David's at, with discouragement that's controlling him, it leads to another problem in his life, and that's wrong conclusions. He's drawing wrong conclusions now, all right, because unbelief has set in. Discouragement is there as a result of the unbelief. He's no longer praying to God. He's simply communing within his own heart. This own heart now is festering unbelief and discouragement. That's who he's communing with. So know what that's going to lead to? Wrong conclusions. It's going to lead to him making certain conclusions about his life that are completely untrue. Again, discouragement leads to wrong conclusions. Rarely will you find somebody who is discouraged that makes a right conclusion. David said here that he would die by the hand of Saul. Look here, let's go back to verse 1. David said in his heart, I shall now perish one day by the hand of Saul. Discouragement is set in, and he's now drawing wrong conclusions. He is not going to die by the hand of Saul. That's when he was just convinced, I'm done running. One day Saul's finally going to get me. He was wrong. That wasn't going to take place. He drew wrong conclusions. David then also makes another conclusion. Notice, look how he continues his train of thought here. This is an incredible statement. It's almost at times hard to read with David's life, but it does give you such a clear glimpse of how far this man of God has fallen, a man who's after God's own heart. He says this, there is nothing better for me than I should speedily escape into the land of the Philistines. There's nothing better for you than to go live in a pagan land? In an idolatrous, which if you notice, by the way, if we go back to chapter 26, you can tell where this had been on his heart, all right? Even during the time of victory, because it was something that he was afraid of. Where was it in verse 26, if I remember? Let me see if I can find it. David talked about, when he was talking with King Saul, he talked about his concern of because of King Saul. Yes, yeah, here, I believe it's verse 19. Now, therefore, I pray thee, this is David talking to King Saul. Let the Lord the king hear the words of his servant. If the Lord has stirred thee up against me, let him accept an offering. But if they be children of men, cursed be they before the Lord, for they have driven me out this day. This is the statement. For they have driven me out this day from abiding in the inheritance of the Lord, saying, go serve other gods. Here's David bringing that to fruition in his own bad decisions, not because of King Saul. He's decided that there's nothing better for him than to go dwell in a pagan land, the next king of Israel. Again, discouragement leads to wrong conclusions. He made that decision, please understand, because that's what he believed. I know you understand this, but please think about this in your own life. Not just in the life of David or your husband or your wife or your children or other church members. You can believe something and be very, very wrong. King David here is very, very wrong. He's concluded there's nothing better for him than to go into the land of the Philistines. He was so wrong. He had wrong conclusions because of discouragement and unbelief. David is forgetting all the way back to 1 Samuel chapter 16 when he was anointed to be the next king of Israel. That's what he's forgotten. It's not like it's not present in his mind. Remember, he knows that event took place. He doesn't have amnesia, just like we don't get amnesia. What he's doing is he's failing to see the application and how that's going to play out in his life. And because he can't see it, he doesn't believe it's going to come to pass. It's not up for you to see it. It's up for God to do it. David said again, he's going to die by the hand of Saul. He was wrong. David did not believe what God had said would come to pass, and so he drew wrong conclusions. When you remove faith from your life and the Christian life, you begin to operate on wrong conclusions. You begin to operate from a premise that is no limit. We walk by faith. That's dealing with your everyday life. And when you are trying to walk in this life apart from that faith, you will draw wrong conclusions. You'll draw wrong conclusions in the decisions you make. You'll draw wrong conclusions in what others are thinking. You will draw wrong conclusions. David is discouraged. Discouraged people, and it's a common one. I think we all understand this. I don't think this will be a new revelation to anybody. But discouraged people overstate their problems. They overstate their problems. You say, why do they do that? Because they leave God out of the equation. You leave God out of the equation. Don't get me wrong. If we take God out of the equation of our life, we're all in a whole lot of trouble. We can all be discouraged. We might as well just throw in the towel. So the overstatement comes because the discouragement is what's controlling, the unbelief is what's controlling, and you remove God from that equation and you overstate your problems. You overstate them. This is a dangerous place to be. Because when you remove God, you're no longer communing with God. You're making wrong conclusions. When you make wrong conclusions, they're going to lead to wrong decisions, wrong choices for your life. You see, discouragement, that's a powerful thing that can be used in your life. And it's learning not to let it do what it's supposed to do. I don't have a formula where discouragement never comes. We're still in the flesh. It's going to take place. We see it in different men. I think we can even see it at different times in the New Testament. I think the Apostle Paul had method of how he dealt with it. You know, what's the chapter there? Let me see if I can read that a little bit. I don't have it here on my notes. It's just coming to mind now. I think it's in 1 Corinthians 4. I might be wrong about that right now. If it's there, I'm going to read a couple of verses. If not, I'll just talk about it. Let me see if I can find it there. Yeah, that's not what I want. Let me go to 2. Maybe it's 2 Corinthians. Maybe my mind's not. Yeah, 2 Corinthians 4. Yeah. I like how Paul put this. We are troubled on every side. I'm starting in verse 8, yet not distressed. We are perplexed, but not in despair. Persecuted, but not forsaken. Cast down, but not destroyed. Always bearing about in the body the dying of the Lord Jesus, that the life also of Jesus might be made manifest in our body. I think the key there is this. He's talking about these different things that he's battling that want to destroy him, that want to hinder him, but he says he's not letting them. He knows to some extent they're going to come because he's flesh and because he's human. But he's trying to keep his walk as close to God as he can. And you see, by the time he concludes that chapter, he does give the key to it. He says, I am keeping my eyes simply on the eternal and not on the temporal. That's what was driving him. That's what was allowing him to live what he was talking about in 2 Corinthians chapter 4. Where he's saying, listen, this is it right here. Let me go back to those couple of verses. He had said, troubled on every side, but not distressed. All right, discouragement would come to him. It would hit. But he said, I'm not going to let it put me in distress. All right? We are perplexed, but not in despair. I don't know what's coming. I don't understand everything that's taking place, but I'm not going to let it turn to despair. That's what it wants to do. And if you remember, I preached a message on despair because the next step after that discouragement, despair. That's a horrible place to be. And he says, I'm not going to let it do that. Well, how did he do that? That's as you read through. That's what he's talking about there. And as he finishes that chapter, I kept my eyes on God. Well, what did David do here? He took his eyes off of God. He's communing within his own heart. So then you have to make the choice. You have to buckle up, self-discipline, and keep your eyes on God. And then what's good to do is have somebody to encourage you to do just that. Now, I can have Marianne do that for me. And she does that. She'll know. She'll see when it's coming. I can get discouraged as easily as anybody. But she usually grabs me and try and get my focus back. And then the job is this then. Now, once God presents that, it is my responsibility as a Christian to exercise some discipline and follow through with that. That's what it is. The problem is, here it is. This is why your devotions are so important. This is why it's so important you're in church in every service. This is why it's important when you're coming, you're listening to it. Because those moments are going to come in your life when the flesh, let's just use what we're preaching about. This applies to, we can go to all kinds of sins. Okay? Let's deal with what we're talking about right now. The flesh is going to, believe it or not, it's going to want to be discouraged. It will. I'm going to be mad, and that's all there is to it. God, this is not how my life was supposed to work out. Your flesh is going to want that. It's going to take that vengeance. It's going to want to have that in it. It's where discipline comes in. To tell yourself, that's what Paul was meaning there, I'm not going there. I can't stop this from initially coming. I can't. None of us can. It's not possible. But he said, I'm not going to let it destroy me. I'm not going to let it do what it wants to do in my life. David forgot the promises of God. He was losing faith, thus making wrong conclusions. David forgot about all the past deliverances during this time. By the way, in this time right here, when he's here, it's one of the few times in his life that there's not a single psalm recorded by David. He forgot about the time when he was on that edge of a cliff thinking it's over with, fellas. We're done. And then the army just turns and goes away. He's forgetting about just days earlier when, through the Spirit's unction in his heart, he decides to walk right into the army of Saul that's seeking him while they're sleeping. And how God miraculously caused the deep sleep to come on and nobody woke up. And he walks all the way back to the other hillside, gets up on the hill and starts yelling across. You know what else he forgot about? That fight with Goliath. His own words are some of the most powerful preaching there is when he's getting ready to fight Goliath. Thou comest to me with a sword and a spear, but I come at thee in the name of the Lord God, opposed to the armies of Israel. I mean, and then he told him, I'm going to rip your head off. I mean, he's 16, 17 years old. Incredible. So what you do is when it begins to set in, and you need that discipline to hit, and again, you need to be in a place in your life for the where you have that. That's why it's so important every day, because you don't know what you're going to face tonight. You know what you're going to face tomorrow. Where you have the ability through the Spirit of God to access the strength for the discipline that's needed. And if you are playing the game with the Christian life, you're not going to have strength when that hits. You'll find out how powerful your flesh is and how desperate you are in need of God's Spirit to be in control of your life. Discouragement can cause you to forget the great things that God has done for you. It causes you to focus on the negative instead of the positive. David's wrong conclusion again. Again, nothing better. There's nothing better for me than I should just dwell with the Philistines. Wow. How incredibly wrong he was. People convince themselves that there's nothing better now than the world, and I will turn to that. When allowing discouragement to control you, you lose sight of God's working in your life. Now, lastly here this evening, the decision David began to make. David makes the decision to head to the Philistines. While he's there, let's go over some of the events that took place right there. And I'll tie this into what we do sometimes. He heads back to King Achish. He has 600 men with him this time, though he did not last time. That is a difference. And David asks him for a city. Hey, can we have a place of our own? So he gives him a place that's about 25 miles south of where he was there. I'm in Gath, and he says, here, you can take Ziklag, take your men down there and your wives, and you can start right there. So that's exactly what David does. He's in the Philistines, and David now begins raiding other groups of people. Now, granted, the groups of people he are raiding are the enemies of Israel, okay? However, before we're ready to sing the praises of David, his motivation is wrong here. There's everything about this is wrong. I'm sure in his own mind his justification was because it was the enemies of Israel. That's how he's going at this. But before you get all up to know what David was doing all right, I got news for you. For what he did right here, King Saul was removed from being king. Notice what David keeps. The sheep, the cattle, and the livestock. And you know who he brings those gifts to? The Philistines. He didn't even bring them back for a sacrifice to God. In other words, what I'm saying is what he's doing here isn't something sanctioned by God. In his mind, he's thinking, I'm all right here because he is attacking Israel's enemies. That's actually who he's going after. When he goes before King Achish, he lies. He absolutely lies to King Achish. He lets him know, yeah, I'm going after Israel. I want you to show you how I am on your side. He lies about who he was. When you see him reporting back to the king, you know, he lies to him. Again, he's trying to get King Achish sold that our relationship's all right. So David's trying to play both ends here. David thinks he's and David is using some a worldly cunning wisdom right here, right now, in attacking the actual enemies of Israel who were allies with the Philistines, and then going back and telling King Achish that, hey, I'm going into the southern part of Judah here. He wasn't. Matter of fact, if you read on, he was actually bringing what he would also do with some of what he of the spoils from those battles. He was actually giving it to some of his family back in Judah. He wasn't attacking them by any means. And so David, again, he's making a lot of wrong decisions there. So anyhow, the discouragement's in control of his life. It's leading to wrong conclusion about what he believes. So now what he believes is wrong, and so now it leads to the decision-making process. So understand, he's making decisions on things that are not true. Things he believes, but they are not true. Okay? So what he does is he decides to seek temporary relief by going to the Philistines. He says, all right, I'm tired of running. He wants relief. So right now, it's not about seeking God. It's about seeking relief. And so he seeks temporary relief. During tough days, listen, if we're not trusting in God, we can seek relief from what's going on in our life in a very wrong way. You can seek something that's temporary and you think, oh, this is the key. Because at that moment, you can sort of see light at the end of the tunnel, so to speak. But you're operating from a point of discouragement, which has led to you wrong conclusions. It's not a time to make decisions. It's a time to try and step back and say, Lord, please help me think right. I don't know how often I pray that every day. Lord, please help me to think right. At first, it will look like relief, but it will not last. It will not last. Satan will always try and take you out of the will of God. This is one of the ways that he does it. He wants you to seek this will end this. You know, there was times where I remember when we were frustrated in P&G and really just wanting relief. Just wanting. Why? I remember at one point in time, probably the most discouraged I was, and it's still probably the most discouraging time yet in my life, was when Daniel had left. The Lord had allowed, and again, it was one of those times I was really sitting down, Lord, I don't understand. I don't agree with anything you're allowing to take place right now. Daniel had left, and I had no idea how that was going to affect me until I watched him get on a plane and leave. I head back to the work, and then I've got key people had fallen into sin. Man, I was training to be a pastor, and with it, on that Monday, Daniel flew out on an early Sunday morning. That Monday, three different people came to my office at my house from my two works with devastating stories. And both works were down and discouraged for the months to come. And it was an incredibly discouraging time. And I remember at the time just thinking, listen, maybe I need to head somewhere else in the country. I don't want to deal with this right now. I've spent these years here. And you know what I was doing? I allowed discouragement and unbelief to come in, so I was starting to believe things that were wrong. What did I do? I took God out of the equation. I took him out of the equation. It's always dangerous And this is something in our life that we absolutely should fear. Something you should be afraid of. This coming to take place in your life. You know, there's different things that gets us to make wrong decisions. All right. This is one of the avenues that Satan uses. It's one way that he can use discouragement. I mean, and this is the only one we're looking at. I mean, we can get a whole series on probably different things Satan uses to take you out of the will of God. And one thing he does is the mind games. What he has to get you is to make that decision. He can't make it for you. He has to get you to make that decision. Sometimes he just uses worldly allurement, you know, different temptations and things like that. To get you, and again, he'll play you like a chessboard, just like it says in Ephesians chapter 6. He'll wait for the evil day. That's a definite article. It's just not like he's just going to try this every day. He'll wait until they're weak. Now's the time. Set it up. He'll wait for it. Whether that's discouragement he's going to use, whether that's worldly allurement, whether some type of temptation that he's going to use, something to take you out of the will of God. Be afraid of that. Spurgeon said this in regards to this subject. He said, always be afraid of being afraid. Failing faith means failing strength. Do not regard despondency as merely a loss of joy. View it as draining away your spiritual life. Struggle against it. For it often happens that when faith ebbs, sin comes to the flood. He who does not comfortably trust God will soon seek after comfort somewhere else. He's right. He's exactly right. Your heart will seek comfort from somewhere. It'll seek relief. The key to genuine relief, though, is the will of God and trusting God with it. That's the key to this. Not heading off to the land of the Philistines, not turning to the world, not turning to worldly philosophy. It's never the answer. It's always staying as close to the Lord as you possibly can. Don't allow the discouragement to do how it wants to put you in despair and destroy you. It's going to come. But that's where we have to decide, listen, I'm going against this thing. And if that's going to take place, your walk with God is key. Remember, as long as you're staying strong with your walk of God, you really limit the devil's ability to set you up for the evil day. He's limited. Because he knows there's enough strength that God can give you to make it right through it. Listen, there's danger in discouragement. It leads to wrong conclusions in your life. It leads to wrong belief. It leads to you making wrong choices. Listen, it's not during times of discouragement for you to make key life decisions. Listen, I've seen that happen. In the 2 years I've been here, I've seen people come in and make major decisions during times of discouragement. I learned that early on. That was something I give Pastor Bird credit for. And that was something I think he hounded all the time, of the importance of not making those decisions, key decisions for your life, when you're down. Don't make them then. Because he understood, just as the Bible's teaching, the same thing. You're just like now, since I've been, those of you who have this thing, whatever's going around, I don't know if you're like me, but my ability to concentrate and think is clouded. It's foggy. It's frustrating. I sit down and even try and concentrate and study, and it's difficult right now. And that's what discouragement does as well. Clouds that. It clouds it. So again, we need to keep our eyes on the Lord. Trust the Lord with all thine heart and lean not on thine own understanding. And let's go ahead and bow our head and close our eyes. Go into a time of invitation.